Morning Sacramento. ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader. Always live on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome back into hour number two here on the Insiders. James Hamm, Jesse Tapia joining me today. Kyle Madsen's out all week. We've got Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. Of course, we're brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Make sure to swing by a local Jiffy Lube. Get your car ready for the summer months that are upon us. It's supposed to be 100 degrees this weekend.
Yeah, like I'm
tomorrow.
I'm not looking forward to it. I'm not leaving my house, bro. I'm turning on the AC. Like, I'm going to be okay. Like, I'm not going outside.
Yeah.
I'm
with you.
Yeah. I'll take the dog out to maybe go for a walk in the morning or in the evening. So we'll be all right.
I'll probably get up and take a walk with the wife. Mm-hmm. Our oldest has been walking with us lately, which is good. But we'll probably do that around 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe, you know.
I'm a big walk guy too.
Yeah. We've been doing a lot of walking. Trying to get back in better shape and
shout out to anyone who's gotta work outside though in that heat. That's not fun at all.
I'm gonna be in the heat, baby. Let's go.
That's your rite of passage though, is a street team promotions.
Let's
I remember
go.
We'd be at Thunder Valley
yep.
for some concerts. I'm just all right, does anyone have any water bottles?
Yep.
Just sweating.
Hey, I remember Papa Roach at Concerts in the Park last year. It was like 110, I think. But hey, I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna be outside all weekend.
When I got the call for that job, I was doing a side job at the time for the summer, helping a friend lay out concrete and stuff, and we're leaving the dump and it's already like 100 degrees, 9 o'clock in the morning, and the promotions person at the time, like, hey Jess, do you want to come work? Yep, I'll be there whenever you need me.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's miserable.
Yeah, I left that job after that.
Yeah. I don't miss that. I helped build the downtown plaza when I graduated from high school. I went right into when they built the plaza, when it went from the K Street Mall to the downtown plaza, and I worked swing shifts. So we started at three to midnight, and it was 104, almost every day.
Yep.
I would drink a Gatorade and sweat the entire thing out.
Yeah. Shout out to you outside workers. That's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It's a tough life.
Legends out there.
Let's get back into this. First of all, we got some minor things we'll kind of run through. First, the A's lost again last night. They are not playing well at all right now. I think they've lost 13 out of 14. They're down to a 23-33 record. They're 10 games under 500, which has all happened in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, is the story with the A's, you guys helped me out here, Joe, as well. Is the story with, I know all the Sacramento stuff, we can leave that to the side, but this is a team with young players that you're just kind of watching to see how they develop this year? Because I know a lot of people were talking, they might be 500, blah, blah, blah. Are you just watching Jacob Wilson tear the ball up and all that stuff, just the young guys kind of play and see where it falls?
Really, for me, the biggest issue that they have is that their bullpen is just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not spend any money at all on their bullpen this summer.
You don't say.
And well, I mean, they did.
They did on Severino and stuff, but
yeah they paid Severino. They paid. They paid Lawrence Butler. They paid Rooker. But the problem is, if you don't pay for a bullpen, you're going to be in a bunch of trouble. And so Mason Miller has not been all that effective here after the first 3 weeks of the season. He's been very hittable. And then the rest of the guys are just, nobody has a bunch of Major League Baseball experience. And it's tough because that's where, what was the stat? The A's have given up, they lead the lead. They're tied, I think, with the Yankees with most grand slams given up this season with 5.
Mm-hmm.
All 5 have come in the month of May. In the first 22 days of the month of May, they've given up 5 grand slams. You can't compete with that.
Yeah, no.
And almost all of those are bullpen. So you're having guys, load the bases and then somebody else is coming through and not being able to close the game out. So really, really rough. Although our guy, Jacob Wilson, is absolutely crushing it. He was 2-for-4, hit his 7th jack yesterday. He's batting .353.
I'd be pretty shocked if he wasn't Rookie of the Year this year.
Oh, right now he's the Rookie of the Year.
I don't even know who's close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Kurtz could have given him a run for his money because all of a sudden he started hitting home runs. But then he's on the injured list with a hip flexor. So he's going to be out for a little bit. The Giants fell again, fell yesterday as well. That's 3 in a row for the Giants. They're 31 and 31 and 25. six games over 500. They're playing well. They beat, I mean, they lost to the Tigers. Interleague play is like so strange still. Like, I know it's been around for, like, you guys only know interleague play, but for years and years, there was no commingling of the
I don't
the
get
NL
that either. Like, I don't, I think that's worse.
See, I'm pro DH.
Yeah, me so, too as well. Yeah,
like I love that,
David Ortiz.
Yeah, I love that every team now, you know, the National League also has a DH.
Unless Carlos Zambrano was hitting, I couldn't care less. Yeah. That's the only guy who was hitting home runs, and like I said, it was even for a pitcher.
Yeah, I was always like, why are we doing this? How come you, why are you making a guy go up there who's batting 100 who's not even like, who's like
well,
swinging
he bunted again.
weekly striking out every single time, doesn't want to hurt himself. I never understood it. So, just like...
I miss it. Really? I miss pitchers hitting. Yeah, absolutely.
See, he's a Giants fan. He's not like us AL guys. We're just seeing bombs hit all over the park and stuff like that.
You know, funny enough, I just was watching Bumgarner's home run highlights. But
that's
even
him and Zambrano were the ones who can actually hit. Yeah, if, like I said, four pitchers.
It just adds an extra element of excitement when that pitcher finally does get that big hit.
How do you feel about your Giants?
You know, the pitching is the least of my worries, especially we moved Doval back to the closing role, which was the right move, absolutely. And then we got guys like Randy Rodriguez and whatnot in the bullpen. Ryan Walker, of course. The bullpen and the pitching, it's still locked in, no doubt. But the hitting's got to go, man. I mean, the bats aren't swinging right now, and your pitching can only get you so far. If you're only putting up one or two runs a game, like, it's just not going to happen. So we need Bailey to start hitting. We need all of our first basemen to start hitting. We need our shortstop to start hitting.
Yo, Brazil says the Giants need bats.
Giants need bats.
The Giants haven't had a legitimate hitting first baseman in, like, decades.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to say, like, Will Clark. I'm not giving you Brandon Belt. I'm just not.
I'll take Brandon Belt.
I'm not giving you Brandon Belt.
I'll take Brandon Belt.
A legitimate hitting first baseman.
James, and that's where the line stops.
That's
right
where
there.
It is, the Brandon Belt line. Yeah. I got you.
You know what I don't miss? I don't miss watching a 220 hitting second baseman that can't hit the ball out of the park at all getting walked so you can strike out the pitcher the next batter.
That's a really good point.
I don't miss it. I don't miss
that
any of
that. That is a really good point.
They're like, they're strategy. It's like, yeah, just send that guy who can't hit to first base so you can get the guy who really can't hit.
Yeah,
maybe he'll get lucky.
The DH needs to stay for life.
That's right,
it should stay, but I do miss it.
Okay, we had this Cam Scadabo from Sac State and then Arizona State, right?
Yep.
He fell to the fourth round in the NFL draft. But he was on the St. Brown podcast. Have you seen this?
I saw the clip.
Okay, so Amon-Ra and Equanimeous, St. Brown, they have their own podcast. And he said he thought he was going to be drafted by the San Francisco 49ers with the 100th pick. And he thought, you know, the vibes were high, the lights started turning on, videos started turning on, and then no phone call. And then the next morning he woke up and knew that, you know, he'd go in the first 10 picks because the Niners, the Giants, Tennessee, all had shown interest in him, and the Giants called, and, you know, so I would have loved to have seen him on the 49ers.
Yeah, everyone wants to root for the hometown kids. That would have been a fun story. That's always, like, the funnest story you could probably do as a rookie.
Well, that guy's a beast.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of one of one. I don't know, like, he's not a fullback or anything like that, but I don't know who runs like him in the league. Where he's just kind of short stout, but just like a little bull or whatever.
It kind of like,
and I don't know, like he's not going to be this every down back or anything like that, but
kind of like Mike Allstott. That's,
yeah,
he used to kind of like, he just beats you up. Even he's not very big, but Austin Eckler, you know, guys who just like head down and like hit people. So yeah, I don't know. I think he's a guy. He can score touchdowns. I think at the pro level, he'll be a guy that scores a bunch of touchdowns.
Dr. David in the chat. Peyton Hill is number two. Hey, don't do that. Don't do that. Madden legend, by the way.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that.
It's a one hit wonder.
And again, Casey Tucker mentioned Mike Allstott.
Yeah, I thought Mike Allstott was a little taller, like just kind of bigger, or whatever. But
yeah,
he's similar though. I can see it.
Yeah, touchdown Tommy Vardell. That's a little too early for you.
I was going to shake my head. Yeah.
Stanford kid who went to the Browns and, you know, again, a big-time touchdown guy at the college level. Yeah. I think Scadabo can be that at the pro level.
Yeah.
So, I kind of wish the 49ers would have drafted him. I just think it would have been a cool story. On top of that, DeMar DeRozan was on the Run Your Race podcast with Theo Pinson and AJ Richardson. He kind of rehashed the chaos of the 2024-25 season. And for me, it was interesting to watch. I know it sounds weird. It was interesting to watch a really, really solid veteran guy who's been in the league for, this was his 16th season, but go through chaos for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm so used to chaos.
Yeah, no, this is not normal what happens in Sacramento.
It's not normal. Yeah. So, I can say, let me think, just off the top of my head, Key Smart replaced Paul Westfall midseason. Ty Corbin replaced Mike Malone midseason. And then George Karl replaced Ty Corbin midseason. On top of that, we've got Alvin Gentry replacing Luke Walton midseason, and you've got Doug Christie replacing Mike Brown midseason. So I've seen a coach replace midseason 5 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like for you media guys out there, it's kind of, oh, here we go again anytime it does go down.
No, totally. I'll tell you, I remember when the puke game, when the guy throws up all over the court and then Luke Walton is let go the next morning. We were walking down to the media room, and Brendan Nunes had not gone through this before. And it was it was quiet, and everyone was like, okay. And he's like, what do I do here? And it was, and I looked at him, I'm like, don't worry, me and Jason and Sean, we got you. We've been through this a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay. I said, if you want to ask a question, but what you don't want to do is ask about the game, because that's not what the story is tonight. The story is a coach that's about to get fired. And we all knew. And then we walked in the media room and it was peppering around, and it was interesting. But now here we are a couple of years later, and Brennan's been through it.
No, he knows what to do.
He's already gone through it again. And you see it coming.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, no. When Mike Brown got fired, there was no question. I knew a couple of days before,
mm-hmm.
and we had talked about it, and we knew it was coming right before Christmas, but then they waited until after Christmas, and it was really uncomfortable. Right? But you've been through it a bunch of times. So to have a player come through who's a Hall of Famer, and DeMar DeRozan, who's been in the league 16 years,
yep.
and who has never been through a situation where a coach got fired midseason, was stunning. What do you mean you've never been through this?
Well, the guy played for the Raptors, and the Raptors have never really been too dysfunctional, as far as I can think.
Well, I mean,
at least with him.
No, probably not. Yeah, they did fire, who was their coach?
Dwayne Casey.
He won
Coach of the Year.
Coach of the Year, and then they fired him. But that can be a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't know if that was dysfunction or just more so.
George Carter.
Because they kept losing to LeBron at that time and stuff like that. But either way, it wasn't like this in Sacramento or anything like that. And then you get to San Antonio, and San Antonio was tip-top shape no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, Chicago was.
Are you surprising that they never fired a coach there?
Yeah, Chicago was just a playing team or whatever. And then you get to Sacramento, it's just boom, 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 boom. And he kind of fell into a role that probably wasn't supposed to be in when he got there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. The reason why he ends up being a player who was able to average 20-plus a game this season is because of the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
There should have been a point where you started to transition this team to, the Keegan Murray team, and you didn't do it because, chaos hit. And then going through, having the best player on a team traded, and people can want to argue that or whatever on the outside. De'Aaron Fox inside the locker room and in the practice facility and on the court was understood as the best player on that team.
Yeah.
By the players. De'Aaron's our guy. Right. So when that happens, that's also another earth shattering, chaotic moment.
Because DeMar during the podcast talks about it was one thing after another. We're not playing the clip because I think they cussed during it or whatever. But he talks about Mike Brown gets fired, then De'Aaron gets traded, and then Zach LaVine and the new guys get here. And he talks about how he's trying to find his footing with the guys that are already there. People get traded, and then he's kind of assumed this leadership role because no one else is there or whatever. And he's kind of trying to work with Zach when he's still trying to figure out the past team and all that stuff. there was never a flow that team found at all last year, just based off of what he said. It was just constant, just on the move, like Doug Christie was saying when he took over. It's kind of trying to fix a plane on the fly, and they just never found their footing at all.
Yeah,
and it was impossible too. Like, I don't think it was just way too much going on for them to even find any sort of consistency.
Well, then you had the injuries happen. Mm-hmm. You know,
people. Yeah, you talked about Monk getting hurt and all that.
Well, Monk, but also, you know, remember Sabonis. Everyone thought Sabonis was going to be out for the season.
Yeah,
and was able to come back and keep playing. Like, it's just, I always joke around. I have a running thing that me and Del Enos, one of the scorekeepers, the official scorekeepers, we always take a gauge on what we think is going to happen for the season. Like, right before the season starts, we throw out a number of how many wins. And there was one season where I said, I think this team can win 45, but I want a plus or minus 8. And he's like, well, no, that we always do a plus or minus 3. And I'm like, yeah, but this season in particular, I think if they let the chaos come in, it will eat this team. Mm-hmm. And they'll drop to 35 wins or 38 wins. And I said, but if not, I think they can actually win 50. And sure enough, they traded DeMarcus Cousins that season. Rudy Gay popped his Achilles. They traded Omri Caspi.
The chaos got in.
Yeah, the chaos came to Sacramento. And that's the problem. Like, how do you avoid the chaos and how do you keep the chaos out? And I wonder, like, how much will this change? Like, the Kings were able to land DeMar DeRozan as a free agent. Again, one of the most accomplished free agent signings the Kings have ever had, right? Even if the fact is he was 35 and they had to do a sign and trade to get him, it still was a free agent acquisition. I wonder if this is going to impact the way that some of the like older players might look at the Kings and be like, they're still not a team I would consider.
Well, you look at it because they were talking about in the pod as well, like, there was pieces there. Like, there was something you could believe in. And right now, Do they have something you can believe in?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got a lot of work to do to convince anyone to believe in this team moving forward for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And, like Doug's got a lot of work to do as a coach, but also Scott Perry he's got to go out there and try to find his Shea or his Tyrese Haliburton or his Jalen Brunson or his...
Good luck, Scott.
Or his Anthony Edwards, yeah. Well, we'll discuss that more when we come back. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, 98.5 HD2. You can find us on youtube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch. We're on the Twitter box, all of that stuff. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll see you in just a minute.
You're listening to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader. Now, back to the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back in. I'm James. It's Jesse over there. Joe's over there. We're hanging out with you until noon. We'll have the handoff coming up in, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes. I think Kenny Caraway will be in today. Was that?
No, he was here yesterday, I think.
Oh, then it might be Damian Barling.
Might be a Damian Barling day.
It might be. So
someone will be here. Someone's going to sit in that spot.
Yeah, and then, of course, D'Lo and Casey take over at noon from 12 to 4. You can listen to them here on ESPN 1320. We've had, like, a ranging conversation today, mainly centered around, like, what we believe is probably going to be the finals. Tonight we have, what is game four? Well, game five, right?
Game five on ESPN 1320, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Knicks Pacers tonight at what, 4 o'clock?
Then you catch coverage at 4:30, I believe. The game starts at 5, you'll catch coverage at 4:30.
Okay, perfect. So tune into that later on this evening. But I think all of us kind of, like, you can see the writing on the wall. Like, unless the Knicks have some crazy switch that they hit, it's going to be very difficult for them to climb back into this series.
Yeah, I mean, things always get tricky because if you get this one, it's like, hey, you get game six and you're able to come back too. Because are they in New York or Indiana today?
I want to say they're in New York.
Yeah, they're in New York. So if you get this one and you're able to get lucky in game six, hey, game seven in New York, who knows what happens. But I don't see it happening.
Okay.
It just feels like we know what the series is, but like it could go either way. But like I said, I just don't see it happening.
Well, that and I think that we still haven't had that that true Indiana game where they shoot like 60% from the field and 55% from three and are just an offensive juggernaut that no one can stop.
Yeah.
Like that game is still hiding. And the Knicks, while like they have some really good defensive players, they don't have a great overall. Like, I don't think that they're a great defensive team. They're a really good defensive team, but they're not a great defensive team. So I'm kind of waiting to see if there's any life in them at all. I'd hate to see another game like what we saw last night.
Yeah, that'd be kind of tough. I think it'll be a little, it'll be a lot closer than last night for sure. I think it'll go down to the wire possibly and all that, but it's just like Indiana's playing their best basketball this season right now. You mentioned they haven't had that one game yet, but overall they've been playing really great ball, and it's just the Knicks are always just so hit and miss so far this playoffs.
Yeah, it feels like as soon as you get, even last game, I think they had their top five guys all had solid games, and they still lost.
Yeah.
And that's where you kind of go, okay, look, you just don't have another pitch. Like, you don't have something else you can throw at this team. So if somehow you just, like, out-physical them and just, like, again, dominate them, like, maybe on the offensive glass, maybe there's a Josh Hart game where he goes for, like, 17 rebounds or something and Indiana just can't find a way to stop them. But this series feels like it's heading towards a very quick end.
And if it doesn't today, is that a disappointing season for the Knicks? You kind of built your team. Well, it's what we were told all offseason. They built their team to beat Boston and all that. You did beat Boston, but I think you're probably hoping to beat Boston in the conference finals rather than the second round. Like, this was supposed to be a finals team, though.
I feel like this is a disappointing end to the Knicks because the way that the Cavs fizzled out and the way that the Celtics fizzled out.
It was there for you. Like, if you look at it.
Yeah, I mean,
for the team that you built, for the team, for what you wanted to reach as well.
Yeah, and like this team, they only won one more game than Indiana during the regular season, but that you still felt like the Knicks were a team that were like destined for something and at least to be like in the conversation.
It was always a top three. It was never a top four in the East. It was always the Knicks, Cavs, and Boston rather than Pacers, Cavs, and Boston and the Knicks. It was always just the group of three rather than the four. Yeah, so they always grouped in with the Celtics and the Cavs all season long, I feel.
Yeah, and I would say,
expecting one of those teams to make it out the East.
Even the Bucks, I think most people would have put above Indiana coming into this. I think it's really remarkable what Indiana's been able to do. And, you know, again, we give a lot of credit to Tyrese Haliburton all the time here because we have like an affinity towards him. You know, he's a player that we watched as a young kid here in Sacramento and everything else. But Rick Carlisle's done an unbelievable job. And Kevin Pritchard's also done a great job of building that team. Like, that is a very, very high quality team that's built the right way, that has all the right pieces to sort of, I don't know, just outrace you. And I'm intrigued by the collision course. Like, what will this team look like against OKC? And I haven't even looked to see what they were during the regular season. But you just have this feeling like this is kind of like a destiny, you know, like the teams that are destined.
And if you're the Knicks, and we'll call it a disappointing season, then do you look to shake up the roster a bit? Do you look and call the Bucks and see, hey, like, we could have a Karl Anthony Towns and the Miles Bridges or Mikal Bridges for you, maybe for whatever picks you want to throw in there? Like, do you make that call, or do you just kind of look towards internal growth?
Well, the problem is I don't think you're going to get a bunch of internal growth because the players that you have are who they are.
Yeah, they're all established guys.
Yeah, they are very established. I think the way that the Knicks can improve and get back in this thing and be a better team next year is if they're able to add two or three pieces that make sense during this offseason.
If you add two or three more pieces, that's great, but you got a coach who's only ever played seven of them.
No, I get that,
like, do you think...
You got to have players that he can play. Like,
do you
think
he's too stubborn to, though? Like, do you think he actually will? Because it's not even, like, about... Like, yeah, I'm saying the Knicks can add whoever off the bench and all that, but, like, is Tibbs going to just kind of go outside of his ways and, like, play those guys? Like, I guess my question indirectly is, like, do you need to move on from Tibbs?
I mean, it's a good question. Like, you might need to move on from Tibbs, but I don't think so. Like, I
lean towards no right now, but it's just... I don't know if I could buy into Tibbs running a 10-man rotation or anything like that.
No, but I think that if you had players that were better than Landry Shamet or
because there's that, yeah, like, it's not
Mitchell Robinson, you know.
Mitchell Robinson's been pretty good on that one. They've been better with him on the court this postseason.
They are, but Mitchell Robinson got hurt and, you know, came into the season injured and missed a ton of time.
Yeah.
And I just don't think he's ever been able to sort of put his stamp on who he is as a player with this specific team. I mean, he only played 17 games on the season.
Yeah, no, he played 17, but he's been good for them in the playoffs. Orrin Smith says they need a playmaker off the bench, a monk-like player, Jordan Clarkson type.
Yeah, yeah, like Miles McBride, Deuce McBride. He's just not – he's not – you can't have confidence in him right now to be that guy. And so I would agree. Someone like Monk would like be great on that team. And they're going to have to, I think they will, because of the draw of New York, the draw of a really highly competitive team that, you know, made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think you're going to be able to add like one or two, maybe even three really, really solid players that can actually step in and help you. I just don't, you know, again, what are you getting out of Precious Achiuwa off the bench? You know, DeLon Wright, they won't even run out there. Campaign, they haven't even run out there. Like, the lack of confidence in these players that they do have, it is part of who Tibbs is. But I don't know.
Wilson throws it in here. He says, the problem is Tibbs can't blame players when Spoelstra's playing undrafted guys. The Grizzlies are playing second rounders all year. And he said, okay, he has a bunch of randos, according to James. But, like, doesn't Tibbs just kind of got to coach up a little bit?
Yeah, I guess. You know what? And I'll make this argument, too. When you talk about, like, you know, the randos, if you were to put, let's just say you're going to put Aaron Wiggins or Isaiah Joe or, I don't know, name that player that's coming off the Oklahoma City bench.
Mm.
I don't think Thibodeau will play any of those. And that's what I mean by, like, the randos of the group.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I'm not being disrespectful to those guys as players, but they're not, number one, they're not starters. They're not in your standard five-man unit. And then on top of that, they're not guys that you think of like Malik Monk.
Yeah.
Like, Malik Monk's not a rando. He's just not, you know, he's a guy that everybody in the league knows that can put up 17.
So you think they probably just need some higher level role players off the bench
for the Knicks? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're going to have to be level player that Thibodeau respects mm-hmm. enough to play. And I don't know if they've got the money to do that, but yeah,
that's where, like, maybe, like you said, maybe you just part ways with Tibbs.
It's tough. Like, I don't think I would part ways with Tibbs, because what's the answer? Are you going to bring like Michael Malone?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. No, I mean, he's a guy who got a team over the hump.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, there's options, but I don't know if Tibbs is the answer, or if it's just, like I said, moving off of Cat and trying to go for this big, massive Giannis deal or what, but, or maybe just running it back, because they did get to the conference finals, and this is the first year with this group all together.
Yeah.
And I know us as radio people and working in media, whatever you want to call it, we're quick to, let's blow this team up, add this, add that, so...
I don't think, okay, so I feel differently about the Knicks than I do the Timberwolves. I think the Timberwolves, like, they've put themselves in a situation where, number one, they're not New York. Uh-huh. So New York just prints money, right? And they just had an ownership change, and it was contentious, and it's finally done. But we saw last year how they did the cost-cutting move. I think that there will be more cost-cutting that goes on here in Minnesota, and it will make it more difficult. You know, I could see, you know, maybe Mike Conley being on the outs with Rob Dillingham, right? Hiding there on the bench. Maybe they go that direction. They're going to have a tough time keeping Naz Reid. He's got a player option of $15 million. And we talked about Julius Randle. He's got a player option of $30 million. He's going to want to get paid this summer. He's going to say, hey, I want a 5-year $150 million or something, or I want a 4-year $120 million. Like, he's going to want that money, and Naz Reid's going to want money. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker is an unrestricted free agent, and you could lose him. So you could see them taking a step backwards just because of, you know, like, attrition, like basically what happened in the Denver Nuggets.
That's where I think Minnesota's headed.
Yeah.
I think they're taking a step back.
No, I think so too. And, I, you know, if you look at Denver when they won the title, then they end up losing Bruce Brown. Then they end up losing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And it's not like these players are, like, the best players on the team. But they're so integral to, like, their role.
Yeah.
And when you lose them, and then you're trying to backfill that position with Christian Brown and, you know, whoever else you can possibly find, but you have no money and you have no picks. That's the other thing. Denver has not had picks or money, it puts you in a really, really difficult position. And it's a difficult position because they made like one minor, like they gave Zeke and Najee like a 3-year 24 or something. That deal right there, it's hurt them so bad. Like if they could have moved off of just that $8 million and gone out and found, you know, $3 million players that could have helped them more, that would have been a much better, you know, sort of line of attack. But they're not developing talent in the same way that OKC is. Mm-hmm. So when OKC pays a guy a 4-year $40 million deal and everyone in the league's like, that seems a lot for that guy. And then he shows up in the playoffs and plays great defense and hits a couple of big shots. And you're like, okay, maybe you were right. And it's just about sustainability. And that's why OKC has such a head start on everybody.
Yeah, Russ in the chat house asks, would you like Mike Conley for the Kings? What's like the bare minimum type point guard we're looking for in Sacramento?
You know, I really like Mike Conley. It's just he's, 38, 39?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Like, unless you have... where you would have a guy like Mike Conley is how Scott Perry brought in George Hill to work with De'Aaron Fox when he's a rookie. Like, if you had a rookie point guard and you wanted a guy to be sort of put your arm around him and show him the ropes, you know, whether it's Mike Conley or Chris Paul, like... but the Kings don't have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have, like, you're not going to convert.
No, we need someone to play point guard and, like, actually lead us here.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to convert a guy like Keon Ellis to a point guard. You're not going to be able to convert Devin Carter to a true point guard. That's just not who they are as players.
Yep.
So I don't like that idea. And it's, you know, the Jrue Holiday idea, which has been thrown out there a million times by everybody. I'm okay with Jrue Holiday as... you know, like, again, I think Jrue Holiday, if you take away the age issue, but if you put him in the starting backcourt with Zach LaVine, it's probably the most logical fit because of his ability to play defense, right? And to not need to be a 18 to 20 point per game scorer. Like, if Jrue Holiday is averaging 14 and 6 for you, you're probably okay, right? Because you know he's going to give you great defense. I just don't like the fact that he's, you know, like 34, 35, and owed a ton of money.
Yeah, I love me some Jrue Holiday on the Celtics, blah, blah, blah. I'm pretty out on him as a Kings player, I think.
Well, that and what if, like, four of your rotational pieces are, you know, one of them is 30, 31 with Zach LaVine, but then 35, and then, you know, Jonas Valanciunas is like 32, 33. All of a sudden, you're a team who's, like, aging out, and you're not good enough to be a team aging out.
Yeah, and, like, Jrue this year with Boston had his worst year offensively scoring since his rookie year. Didn't shoot the ball well at all from three at all. Like, he's still a good great defender and all that, but, like, he was a step slower, I think. I don't think that's really elevating the Kings either.
No, that's status quo.
Yeah.
And that's moving, you know, again, DeMar DeRozan for a different position player. And then you got to go find a way to backfill the DeMar DeRozan position.
Yeah, because it's a lot of money tied up in Jrue, LaVine, and Domas. And I assume if you're bringing in Jrue, that's kind of like your core three. I don't think you're going to be able to bring in someone who makes more than that. So you're probably not bringing in a player better than those three. And I just can't believe in a team like that.
Yeah, that's tough. And especially when you're going to have to pay Keegan Murray. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? And then that messes with your salary. I think the key to this offseason for the Kings is really to start looking at what is your number one option? Who is your best player? Can you get a better best player than what you have right now?
Yeah.
Is there any way to do that? And realistically, if they're 25, 26, they're under contract long-term, or you can put them under contract for long-term, that's the route the Kings have to find right now. It's, you know,
that's the only way I think you could save this.
I agree.
Bringing in a player like that. It's the only way where it's like, okay, like they kind of got back on their feet. Let's see what they do now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would like to see, you know, again, I think Jrue Holiday is like, he's like a solid double, but they need a home run here and someone who makes them younger and makes them more sustainable. And that's where, you know, we keep bringing up like guys like Ja Morant or, you know, again,
Trae Young or LaMelo Ball and
some player. Yeah, exactly, right? All of those types of players, they instantly become your best player and they instantly make you a better team. Like, it doesn't matter what you have to give up to give them. They make you a better team because the Kings don't have enough players to give up to make that would make them worse. So, I really do think that that's where you have to start. You know, the starting point is to figure out how do we get a better player here. You know, a player, and to be honest with you, a player that's better than who De'Aaron Fox is. A player who's better than that. Yeah. And, you know, someone brought up Tyrese Maxey. Man, I would at least call. I would call Philly and say, hey, what would it take?
What do you offer up at that point, though?
Well, I mean, when you're looking at age and you're looking at contract and all that stuff, I'm giving them whatever they want. I know that sounds ridiculous, but, you know, I think he's a two-way player, guy who instantly comes in and gives you, like, a personality. I don't think that they're going to trade him because, I do think that they're going to try to piece this thing together. You know, we're looking at a player. I'm just trying to look at his years under contract. And, of course, I pull up the wrong team. I think Maxey is a player that you can fully build around. Yeah, he's a 35, 37, 40, 43.5, 46.4.
That's nothing the way the money's going right now, too. There's going to be guys making $60 million a year, $70 million a year at this point.
No, I mean, someone may just, like, scream into their car or at their YouTube screen at this point, but I'm offering Zach LaVine and 4 first-round picks.
Zach LaVine and 4 firsts for Tyrese?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't hate the idea of Tyrese, Sabonis, and Keegan.
Yeah, I mean,
like, after that point, you figure out what to do with DeMar, whether he's here or somewhere else, but...
Yeah, you're talking about a net neutral trade.
It's a solid starting point.
Yeah, and you're talking about a guy who's 24 years old, and that's how you're building around. You know, there are people out there who can say, oh, I really like LaMelo, or I really like Trey. Like, this is a guy who plays both ways.
Yeah.
We don't have to sit there and say, well, you can't really bring him in because you can't pair him next to so-and-so. But, you know, I don't think they're going to give him up, but I definitely would call. And,
well, yeah, you need to call every team in the league at this point.
Yeah.
Given, like, it's not looking like it's going to be a rebuild and you're going to try and work this thing on the fly. Like, yeah, call everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's a way in which you can overpay and try to get the right player.
Yeah.
But it's possible that no one takes your call. I mean, that's always a possibility.
Well, Scott, that's why you're here in BJ Armstrong as well. You guys got connections, we heard.
Yeah, you got those connections. So, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we've got the handoff. We think it's Damian Barling that's coming in. We're not sure who's coming in to join us, but we'll have the handoff. We'll talk more about this Game 5 that's coming up tonight between the Knicks and the Pacers, which should be a good one. I'm James Hamm. That's Jesse Tapia. Joe Brazil behind the glass. We're ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
You do got a weird camera.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a light. That's what it is.
Is that what it is?
I usually turn on the light, but...
It looks like it's kind of animated.
Oh.
What's going on, everybody? We're The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. And joining us here for the handoff, we don't have our snazzy...
Bump, taking the handoff is Damian Barling.
There it is.
There you go.
I love when James does the host stuff. It sounds so, like... I'm just not used to it. Like, you do it well. I'm just not used to hearing you do the old host stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you do great. It's just, it's different. We're used to, you know, we're used to Kyle doing all of the, yeah, you know, the little intricacies. It's just different.
I've had a podcast for 14 years. That...
Oh, you good? Well, yeah, but podcasting is such a...
This is chill.
It's very informal. We're chill here. Yeah. No, we definitely are. It's very informal.
Yeah, because we do not talk about podcasting candles here on The Insiders.
Podcasting candles.
Yeah, like Brendan and Sean always have candles that they light.
Like specific for the pod or just, yeah, like, actually, I got this lit up already.
Brendan has a podcast candle now that says, this is my podcast candle that somebody made for him and gave to him.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hate candles. I'm a big candle guy. So.
Yeah, I'm all about the scented candles. Like, yeah. give me something that smells like.
You should be big on stuff that smells good as just a grown-up.
Facts. That is accurate.
Yeah. As a grown-up. Where are you at with this series that's hitting tonight? I mean, we've talked about the Oklahoma City Thunder rolling.
Yeah.
But that game, I mean, anytime you're up 26-9 after the first
quarter.
That
was incredible. That was like, well, all right, I could do something else with my night.
Yeah.
Like the whole story was in the first quarter. Like,
yeah.
You can, and of course, like I didn't turn, I just checked in, watched 5-10 minutes at a time, got up, did something else. The story of the entire game was in the first quarter. It was all right there, and it just played out over four different quarters. Nothing ever changed. As far as tonight, man, I yesterday I thought for sure, like, New York is still in this. Like, New York can absolutely still win a couple of games, and they can absolutely still beat the Pacers. They can absolutely still win this series. But that really flies against the idea that I think the Pacers are legitimately the second best team in the league right now. So them losing three in a row would be of a, it would be a surprise to me. I think the way that that team is built, obviously Karl Anthony Towns' availability does play a factor. Like, I'm not the biggest Cat fan, but if I'm the New York Knicks, I'd rather him be out there than not. So
I'd rather have him than Julius Randle.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a trade where both teams, you know, wind up exiting at the same exact time in the same exact spot. So, like, I'm not sure, but I like the Pacers and have already started conversations about how I think the Pacers can not only compete with Oklahoma City but beat them. I absolutely think the Pacers can win the finals.
I wonder if defense is kind of the X factor in that series with the Pacers and Thunder, because, like, the Pacers can run, but I wonder, like, if the Thunder got something for the Pacers defensively, the Pacers can kind of limit the Thunder.
Well, it's the Gorilla Monsoon line from WrestleMania 3. The irresistible force meets the immovable object.
James, you're familiar?
But yeah, James
well, I know
knows
those lines.
93,173 people. James was one of them.
Yes, he was there.
Which one is the irresistible force and which one is the immovable object, though? Is it Oklahoma City's defense? Is it Indiana's offense? Like, where do these two things meet? And is the OKC offense good enough to beat an average Indiana Pacers defense? Is the Indiana Pacers well above average offense good enough to beat an extraordinary Oklahoma City Thunder defense? And so the thing with me, especially looking at this series that just ended for Oklahoma City, and this is where I'm struggling the most, is I just don't think Minnesota was good.
No, that's we can all call it. That was fool's gold. I'm sorry.
I didn't think they were good at all.
Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like, well, hey, you know, OKC was great last night. They deserve some credit for beating Minnesota. Absolutely. You deserve credit for the series that you win. I'm just not going overboard. Like, I saw Bobby Marks tweeting, OKC, they keep getting better throughout the playoffs. That's scary. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think, you know what I think is the most telling thing? And I can't wait to hear Kenny's comments on this, because I know he has them. The most telling part of that game last night was the post-game press conference when they asked Ant-Man about being upset. And he's like, well, why would I be upset? Like, I'm 22, 23 years old. I got a whole bunch of these ahead. Sir, Dan Marino went to the Super Bowl his, what, rookie year?
Oh, yeah.
Never went back.
Yeah.
He's been to, and I know the NBA is a lot different than the NFL, but you've been to back-to-back conference finals. You couldn't get over the hump either time. And just like with the idea of, like, nah, that's cool, I'll be back. Like, Ooh. Oh, man. That, to me, that's the Timberwolves. Ooh. The Timberwolves are like, ah. Whatever,
let me tie
bro.
That in real quick. Remember Trae Young? Yeah, regular season's a little boring now. Ready for the playoffs.
Right?
Has not been back.
One trip to the
level since.
One trip to the conference finals.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's a handful of games into the next season talking about, the regular season is boring.
Still hasn't got back.
Ja yep. Morant, we're good in the West.
Yeah.
You know, we opened the show by talking about the ascension of Shea. And for that matter, Ty. It's Halliburton. Mm-hmm. And at some point, like, I think we all got into the Jokic, Shea, who's going to be MVP, who deserves it, and everything else. Are we just missing the boat on the fact that Shea is probably the best player in the NBA?
Yeah, we might be. Yeah.
Like, I feel like the league is missing it.
He's very he has a lot of Jokic tendencies in that they're not loud. Like the NBA is a very loud league.
Yeah.
It's a very boisterous league. It's a very Anthony Edwards, Steph Curry. Steph Curry will celebrate a three-pointer in the second quarter the same exact way he celebrates a three-pointer to win the game, you know, at the end of regulation. LeBron obviously is, you know, iconic. Giannis is such a physical marvel. When you look at the guys who are, you know, the so-called faces of the league, Shea, and a lot like Jokic, they're just kind of reserved. Shea likes his fashion stuff. Jokic likes his horses. And in a league that is just riddled with personalities, these guys don't really have one, like a strong one that resonates with audiences. And so I think that hurts him a little bit from a public perception. It's like he's one of those guys who you look at and go, yeah, he's good. And then, like, now that the postseason has gone along and you're only watching a handful of teams, it's like, yo, he's really good.
Oh, yeah.
But like, what do you know about Shea?
Listen, there's nothing to, like, latch on. There's That's no, like, it. Brand or anything like
That's
that.
That's it. Like, what do we know about Shea? Outside fashion is his bag. Like, he loves the fashion stuff. Outside of that, what do we know? They're all team first guys. They do the interviews and the towels and all of that stuff. But it just doesn't, like Jesse said, give you something to latch onto.
It feels like
I think that causes people to miss out on how great he is.
I think he is great. Sounds ridiculous, but he needs his like Rod Tidwell moment.
Right. No, that's not ridiculous at all. And maybe he's approaching it.
Maybe he's going to have it in the finals where he just like lets go.
Or he's Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan's one of the greatest players we've ever seen. Probably has a strong case to be a top 10 player of all time, top 5 player of all time.
Yeah.
But no one thinks about him. They think about the Spurs. They think about the Spurs dynasty. And they'll think about Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich.
Well, and even the greatest power forwards of all time, the first things that pop in your head, Karl Malone and Charles Barkley before Tim Duncan, even though Tim Duncan was a better player.
Yeah.
And the reason why you do that is because those guys were such big personalities.
Yeah.
For all the youngsters in the chatty house that don't know, like, what's the Rod Tidwell moment?
It's from Jerry Maguire.
Oh, I've never seen Jerry Maguire.
So Jerry Maguire is repping Cuba Gooding Jr., who's a wide receiver for the Arizona Cardinals. And
I was assuming Rod Tidwell was like power forward from the Mavericks or something. I have no clue what you guys were talking
about. No, he's a jerk. He's a jerk, but he wants to get paid. Yeah, and he's great, but he wants to get paid. I think he's based off of Andre Rison, right?
Is he?
I think loosely based off Andre.
I don't think
Andre.
I knew that.
Maybe. Anyway, he has a moment where he kept telling him, like, Tom Cruise keeps saying, hey, look, you keep telling me to get to, like, you want, show me the money. He's like, you've got to dance. And he's like, I don't dance. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, you got to dance. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm not going to dance with the people. And so he gets crushed on a touchdown, holds on to it, gets up, dances, and has his moment. So,
all right, I'll throw Jerry Maguire on the list, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Maguire is a great movie. Yeah. It still absolutely
works. I've seen all the memes and stuff like that.
Nah, Jerry Maguire still absolutely works. That's a great movie.
Well, that, and you're waiting for him to have that moment, though, like the whole time. And I, again, I don't know if it's like who he is, but that whole entire team is a group of guys who are never going to have that moment.
Yeah, I just don't know if that's him. Like, he's been in the league a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, he's been around a
26?
While. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that moment is coming, and I don't know that he cares for that.
Yeah.
He's got the MVP, like he's staring the Larry O'Brien trophy in its eyes right now.
Yep.
That's the, you know,
it's all that shit.
That's it.
It's all he should care about.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I think that's all it is.
What do you guys got coming up next?
Well, obviously a lot of this reaction to the game last night, Pacers Knicks tonight. We have some, I have what I think is an interesting Tyrese Halliburton conversation that ties into guys like DeMarcus Cousins and De'Aaron Fox that we didn't have last night, or that we didn't have yesterday, excuse me. And Matt George will be with us to kind of hang out, talk Kings and Tyrese and these playoffs. So, honestly, who knows what else?
Yeah.
You never can tell.
Like, Dame's probably got senioritis because he's out tomorrow, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
So it's...
Uh-oh. I'm out tomorrow and Monday. You can't tell me nothing.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, that's going to
be honest.
Do it.
Y'all lucky I'm here. Man, I'm putting my feet up. We vibing today.
That's right. Thanks for tuning in to the Insiders. We'll be back tomorrow. Jesse will be here. We might have a special guest tomorrow. Thanks, Joe Brazil, for working the ones and twos. And that's going to do it. We'll hand you off to...
Do you know what the ones and twos are?
Yeah, like the...
The ones and twos, you know?
The ones and twos. Yeah. Ones and twos.
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
It's not on the mic?
Nope.
We got to go.
It's definitely not.
We got to go.